Welcome to Come to the Brink. I'm Zoe Flowers, and this is a space for those of us navigating profound life changes, like loss, trauma, caregiving, and transformation. It's about what happens when everything you thought was solid crumbles beneath you and you're forced to rebuild. If you've ever felt like you're standing on the brink, this is the space for you. Welcome.
The roles of the hoodoo doctor, conjurer, and plantation preacher were directly inherited from the traditional African priest. But the role of conjurer had been more long-standing than any social role to emerge from slavery and existed well before the appearance of the Negro preacher. Like the African priest, both the hoodoo priest and the early slave preacher employed a complex system of symbols to raise client expectation of a successful outcome, thus to achieve success in their practices. Slaves viewed conjurers as embodied spiritual power. These enslaved men of power apparently provided a rewarding and hopeful counterbalance to the powerless experienced because of enslavement. As part of a wider community response to social expectations for problem solving, the conjurer himself was a living symbol, signifying deep levels of hope, as well as access to alternative sources of support and assistance beyond the slave master's control. The slave community inherited and passed on to freedmen the availability of the hoodoo priest's particular services. And so that section, this reading, comes from Mojo Working, and the chapter was Disruptive Intersection. Welcome, welcome back to Come to the Brink with Zoe Flowers. And this is a space where we talk about navigating life's hardest transitions, loss, transformation, and beauty that can emerge from the wreckage. Today, we're stepping into the world of art, music, spirit, and ancestral power, because sometimes words fail us, but rhythm, movement, and creation can say what we can't. And so I just felt like for this section, for this conversation, there was nobody I wanted to talk to more than Baba Marcus. Baba Marcus is, I want to make sure I say this right, Baba Marcus Sango Doyin?
Shango Doyin.
Shango Doyin, thank you. Mm-hmm. Baba Marcus Shango Doyin Akinyala, artist, musician, spiritual power, and keeper of culture in New Orleans. Baba Marcus carries the weight of his community's joy, grief, and power. He holds space for pain while channeling it into something sacred. Baba Marcus definitely held those things for me. And so again, this is why I'm really, really excited to talk to him. We have not talked for a while, but he definitely stepped in the gap many times at various harsh points in my life. And we also had really fun times. So maybe we'll talk about that too. But yeah, we're going to talk about what it means to hold a community's grief without losing yourself. And we're going to explore how music, art, and culture have been medicine for New Orleans, and why working with our ancestors is not just important, but necessary. So again, Baba Marcus, I am so grateful to have you here. You know, the power you carry is undeniable. We had some, so I like to keep it super, super real on the podcast. So I feel like, you know, we had some troubles connecting. I feel like it was the power. I was like, I don't know if it's the storm. I think it might be the energy, because, you know, our energy can disrupt some things, right? But the way you move, create, and hold space for other people comes with its own weight. So my question to you is, how do you navigate that? But before we get into that, I just want to open the door for you to just say whatever you want before we start.
Okay, well, Inumidun, I'm happy to be here. Oruko Mini Baba Marcus Shango Doyin Akin Lana. And I will have a question. Who wrote the book Mojo Working?
Katrina Hazard Donald.
Okay. Yeah, well, I like how they broke that down. So, yeah, I'm here and available to questions. You got some really intense questions, deep questions. So we're gonna go deep because
Yes.
I'm gonna have to really think or not think to answer the questions. Yeah. So
Absolutely.
go ahead and let's get started.
Yeah, so that first question is, as a practitioner, as a community leader, how do you hold the weight of the community? How do you navigate that?
All right. So I don't really feel like I'm holding the weight of the community. I just am a community member. Okay. So naturally, as a community member and well aware of that, then, I cannot enjoy the type of success that I know I came to Aye to the planet to enjoy unless the community is thriving because I'm a part of it. Right. So therefore, when the community is thriving, I'm really riding high. And if the community's suffering, I'm suffering. I'm a part like everybody else. Now, how I navigate the weight of being involved in a lot of people's lives, okay, as an Ola Risha, as an Awo, whatever, however you want to call us. They got a lot of titles for us in different cultures. Mambo, Hungan, Ola Risha, with a roots doctor, whatever you want to call it. I'm not really too much all that particular about the labels, but my actual title is Ola Risha, okay? And in the Orisha Voodoo system, that's us, okay? Here at Ile Akar Shah Yoruba, New Orleans Bull Bancha. By the way, the real name of this place is Bull Bancha, not Nouvelle Orleans. That's a name from interloping, small-minded, lack-based colonizers,
Period.
okay? Who imposed that name on this place? This place already had a name before they showed up and basically ruined the abundance that was here. That's the name is Bull Banch. It means the place of many tongues. So I like to use the real name, okay? Bull Bancha on the Gulf of Mexico, okay? Now, the way that I carry that weight, kind of like you said, to get back to the first question you asked. Is what I do pray for the Lord, and I give thanks to the Almighty Creator for my trainers, for the Awo that are senior to me, who train me, who birthed my Ashe in this tradition, and everything like that. They're my trainers, my Ojibana, the late great chief Adinibi Ajimu, excuse me, Ibar Torun, may he be chilling in the land of our ancestors, and my Babalosha, the Alapini, Shangodina, Ifatunji, plus more. I could go back to our woes that from the very beginning that I learned from, like Iya Teresa Landrone, Ibar Tarun. May she be chilling with all the Shango Awo and Orun in the place of origination. But the bottom line, when I got initiated, they basically took me through rites that would enable me to be able to help people, but also to be somewhat neutral. Okay. And neutral in the expectancy of success. In other words, the expectancy that things will work out if people do the work. Okay. Because there is no liberation without work. None that I've ever seen. Right. All self-elevation, all empowerment requires work. Right. To survive on this planet Earth and Aye, you must work. Okay, you got to feed yourself, to feed your children. You have to house yourself, et cetera. The only way is work. If we took the modern economy out of the equation, you would then have to come together and build your houses like Iro society, traditional Yoruba society, where they will all help each other build houses. You know what I'm saying? You will have to plant agriculture. You will have to hunt. You will have to fish. Everything requires work. So if you want to develop your Ori, your divine head, that also requires work, the metaphysical work. So if you come to say an Awo, a Ianifa, a Babalawo, or Babalorisha, Ialorisha, whatever have you, and you say, I got a problem, I need help, right? They're gonna tap into the divinities, the Irumole, Orisha, and Ganga, the lower. They're going to say, okay, this is a recipe. And if you follow this advice and you do and you enact power through these rituals, then you're going to see a better day. All that's up to you. It requires work. You could do it or you don't do it. You could follow the advice or you don't follow the advice. You could do the Ebba, the sacrifices, or you don't do the sacrifices. And so what I learned from my Akba, from the elders, the training, was that if they do the work and they root Ebba, they complete the sacrifices, they're going to see better. Things are going to improve. So that gave me a great sense of peace. So I'd be like, okay, if you do the work, you know, it's going to see better no matter how terrible the situation is, whatever seemingly that it seems. Let me say not is. Let me see how terrible the situation seems. You do the work, you're going to see a better day. Now, by the same token, by principles of mind science, by studying mind science, like from great teachers like Neville Goddard, who was a student of the Ethiopian rabbi. Okay.
Yes.
Right. Then I also learned to let people take their own journey. So part of our training is we're not into like, oh, you came to Ifa. Ifa told you to do such and such and you did something different. So it's going to be hell for you. Oh, no, none of that. None of that. No. Our training, the training that you receive is that if they ask for help and they choose to do something different, then your prayer for them is that they will find something that works better for them to get where they need to go. Right. And so, therefore, if people choose different, then based on also, and I get back to that mind science, I realize that everybody has the right, the path and everything to choose their own destiny. And choices that I might not like for them might be the best thing for them. I don't know. Like, for instance, they could choose to abuse narcotics and become a drug addict. Maybe that's their learning experience in this world, which could shorten their life and then in an overdose. Maybe that's their learning experience in this world. It's not for me to say. You understand what I'm saying, right? So therefore, if the people choose to go a different route, I wish them well, but I also kind of fall back and allow them to take their journey, of which I'm no longer really responsible for, or whatever, if I ever was responsible, right? So that's what happened. So I've seen people who came and asked for help. They didn't do anything they were told. And then they end up having some really horrific, some of the worst outcomes you could possibly imagine. And, but you know, that was their choice. They, you know, everything is a teacher. If you were told to make such a eyeball and then you didn't do it and you end up getting shot.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, then getting shot will be your teacher.
Yes.
Okay. So that's how I deal with it. And but as I've gotten older and from serving for a good little minute now, and I've gotten older, truthfully though, to stay energized, I have tried to focus more on those people who will listen and have tea talk and try to kind of send away people who I think are not serious and they're not going to do the work, because there's no liberation if you don't do the work. And I don't really want them draining my energy or draining my enthusiasm for showing up for duty in the morning, right? Because success builds success.
Yes.
And when people come and they do the work and you see them thrive, you become joyful. You become overjoyed.
Yes. Right? Yes.
And I came to this planet to eat, drink, party, and be merry. That's why this spirit came to the planet.
Yes.
To eat, drink, party, be merry, and conquer. Right. Okay. So when I see people rising up, it makes me happy.
Yes.
Right? And it pays for this. That's the payment. I mean, you have to pay for me to sit down and divine for you and all like that. But that little money doesn't really pay me. Right. But last time I say, when I see the families thriving and getting better in life and solving problems better, which to me is one of the most powerful, important things in life, to be able to overcome challenges and obstacles and solve problems, not escape problems, not push problems away.
Yes.
No. Rise up through the problems. It makes me happy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's kind of how I deal with it. I know that was a long answer.
I loved it. I'm taking notes. I'm taking notes. And thank you. I love it. So I just, so there was a few things that stuck out to me. And so I'm going to just go through them. So one of the things that I heard, and I have to say that you are the third person that I've spoken with who works with other people, healing practitioners,
Right.
that have said at this point in time, they really are turning their attention to people who are ready to really dig in and do the work. I mean, I spoke with
Right.
somebody Saturday. They said the exact same
Right.
thing. They are
Right.
gravitating towards people who are interested in lighting their own candle.
Right.
Whereas before, as early practitioners, they felt like they had to like light other people's, and like really walk them through things. But now they're kind of sitting back, listening more, and again, just really wanted to attract people who are on that road. The
Can I
other
say,
piece,
can I add something to that?
please do, please do.
Some of that applies to my journey and experience, but some
Okay.
is a little different, okay?
Okay.
So for the previous 20 years, we set the rules of the Elay that we would serve anybody as long as they follow the rules of the Elay. Elay, the temple here, right? And that went well for 20 years, okay?
Okay.
But after 20 years, it seemed to change and things seemed to shift. And I begin to realize that it's no longer working. Now that is no doesn't have any acumen to speak on that previous 20 years. That previous 20 years, it worked.
Yes.
At least I felt it was working,
Yeah.
right? So something shifted to where it's like, okay, that was that 20 years, but now this next 20 years, or whatever, however many years are left. That's not working anymore. It just changed. So it's not like it didn't work. It was working.
Yes.
Okay, right.
Yeah.
But something shifted, right?
Yeah. And the other question I have for you is you talking about your part of the community and, were you always, I'm just curious now about like little Baba Marcus, if there ever was a little Baba Marcus, were you all, did you always have this spiritual inclination? Like for me, I was always drawn to the spiritual, always, always, always. And of course, at that time, we only had the church. So I was like always in church as a little kid, right? My parents were in bed. I'm taking the church bus to the next town because I always wanted that connection to spirit. So I'm curious if that was something you had to grow into. Or was it something you came with? What are you laughing at?
Absolutely not.
No?
No way, no way, no how. Nope.
Let's
As a
go.
matter of fact, as a kid, I was a mixture of things. I was a regular kid.
Okay.
I was a kid who was sent to elite schools, and then I also was what you call it, borderline troubled youth. This is a facts, okay?
Yes.
So, yeah, no, I wasn't thinking about anything like that.
Okay.
Matter of fact, some of the time I was in trouble. So, that's just a fact. And then some of the time I was in the middle class world, and I was different worlds. I was moving between
Yeah.
different worlds, right?
Yeah.
So, no. And not at all. And matter of fact, at one point though, I think I was going against my nature because it was kind of, out in the streets and kind of had the attitude like, if you're not my homie or whatever like that, then I don't care about you. And by about 16, I kind of started examining that. By 19, I was through with that.
Wow.
So what happened with me at 19, after surviving some incidents, because it was, some things I could not be here anymore, whatever, right? So at 19, I got dedicated to what I felt at the time was the Black Revolution.
Ah.
Well, that's like how many years ago is that? That's almost 40 odd years ago. That's 40 years ago, okay? So, and I haven't changed not one bit since that time till now. As a matter of fact, if anything, even more dedicated. So that dedication into the Black Revolution, I was looking for solutions that rhymes. Revolution, solution. But anyway, I didn't do that on purpose. All
I'm
right.
writing it
That Black Revolution, I was looking for a solution. Anyway,
Yes,
I was
my
looking for
brother.
solutions. And like I told you, I was exposed to various things growing up. I was exposed to the middle class world, I was exposed to the elite world, to the Caucasian world, I was exposed to people in hard times and struggling. I was exposed to people who were involved in criminal elements that would be called criminal elements, although none of us consider ourselves criminals. We were just doing what we were doing, surviving or whatever. And what's the point of this? So I was exposed to all these things. Oh, and I was exposed to Afrocentric Black revolutionaries since birth. All these different things, right?
Yes.
So the revolutionaries carried weight. Okay, they carried weight in my ori, in my mind. So by 19, I fell in with them. I cut out a lot of the harsh things that I was involved in and stuff like that. And, you know, I dedicated myself to like this, you know, worldwide revolution, African revolution.
Yeah.
And so then that evolved into thinking like it's not just as simple as some kind of political thing. We need to have a total cultural foundation, which would include politics, but it's just one aspect.
Yes.
Which includes spirituality, but it's just one aspect. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I ended up just falling back into our traditional culture, which I say I was, you know, exposed to from birth. You know, I've been around people who maintain in our traditional culture since before I was born. Also around people who would be involved in narco trafficking and other in sex work and other types of hustling and homeless and other things like this on the street. This is the real and violence. This is what I experienced. I also was sent to elite private schools with rich, elite Caucasian, mostly Caucasian children. So it was a strange growing up, but no way, no how was I into any spirituality or anything like that, or anything of any, like, you know, higher moral ethics, none of that.
Yeah.
None of that. As a matter of fact, in some aspects, I was the antithesis of that, some ways, I guess.
Yeah. But I feel like this goes back to this thing you said about the choice that we have, though, right? Because clearly, so something you had to grow into, something you had to choose. But so even if there was sort of this overarching ancestral sort of something, even though you didn't hear it or see it for yourself guiding you, you had to make the choice to move in that direction.
Yeah. Well, I got told that was the road. And I just did it. I did it somewhat reluctantly, but like a soldier going to sign up for duty.
Yes.
What I didn't like was what was happening to us as a people. That's what I didn't like. So I was looking for solutions to that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, in a way, fortunately, I had a hand in that other side of being a troubled youth or whatever.
Yeah.
I was definitely involved in a lot of the violence.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I began to say, like, damn, we just trying to kill ourselves. I mean, there was time that I hated other youth that looked like me and tried to kill them as they were trying to kill me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And when I got about 19-ish or whatever, that's when I started thinking about that. I got stories to tell about that, but we ain't going to go into the podcast now.
Yeah.
Bottom line like this, I survived it.
Yep.
And I started thinking about, why are we trying to kill each other?
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of led me to,
yeah,
to this path, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I would love for you to talk a little bit about the role that arts, music, culture, for those of you listening, Papa Marcus has beautiful paintings in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought I saw a djembe. Yes, I see a djembe. So
mm-hmm.
Like full, complete, total artist we're talking to right now. What's the role of arts, culture, music in your life?
All right. Well, if I talk about it in my life, let's talk about it in terms of society.
Okay, let's go.
Okay. So this is my theory that came to me decades ago, and I haven't seen anything to change it. There's about five ruling pillars of society, whether we like it or not. Okay. The first, well, I'm going to give it to you. There's no specific order. One is the military, okay, of any society. Two is the business class or the merchant class of any society. Three is the religious or the clergy class of any society, okay? And the fourth is the political class of any society, right? And here's the one that would surprise some people. The fifth are the artists.
Yes.
But the artists of any nature, I don't care what they are, whether they are drummers, whether they are dancers, whether they are filmmakers, writers, whatever. The artists kind of come in a split because it's kind of like two camps. One type of artist is an employee of the first four classes. So they say, make a poster that says Uncle Sam wants you. And the artists do it. That poster then affects the ori, the psyche of the people, and they go sign up to join the military, and they end up on the front lines in World War II. Whatever.
Yes, yes.
Make a Rambo movie. They make a Rambo movie.
Yes.
To popularize militarism, more youth sign up. Okay,
yes.
Those are the artists who are employees of the first four classes.
Absolutely.
Then there's the fifth artist. Like, I believe the elder's name, Emory Douglas, used to do the for the Black Panther Party. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And they decide, no, I'm going to take my talent and I'm going to give a message to the world and take society to it in another road, show society another light.
Yes.
And they become extremely powerful, more than they could with their hands and their feet. This is why in fascist countries, they attack the artists and the intellectuals because
yes.
they know that they are one of the ruling pillars of society.
Yes.
In 1993, I was doing a mural with Roberto Valadez. We were representing the city of Chicago. We did an Afro-Latino unity mural in Milano, Italy. I said 1993. I'm sorry. This is 1990. Excuse me. 1990. And it was for the World Cup. Okay. And when we get there, Milano, Italy was on fire, and Italian youth, mostly Italian youth, were marching in the streets with Black Panther t-shirts on, Black Panthers painted on their face, going, tuite poderi a gente, all power to the people, and blasting Public Enemy. I didn't know this was going on. They were marching down tanks. I mean, I was there. I saw it. I was there, right? And they had books and everything about Tuite Paldere Argente, all power to the people, with Black Panthers on them, right? And everything you was hearing, the whole soundtrack was Public Enemy. This was in 1990. So, you know, this is an example of them. We did an Afro-Latino mural, huge mural, along with 100 other artists. This was an example of the power of arts to move society. So I got clear at that time that our role as artists is that we're one of the leaders of society, whether we like it or not. Some artists are like, I ain't into all that. You can't dictate what art I say.
Yeah.
I like to paint apolitical things. No such a thing, in my opinion. Everything is politics. If you're living in, let's say you're living in the United States right now and your joy is to paint nature and flowers, that's a political statement. Okay, because at some point in time, you might be following your passion and that's cool. But at some point in time, you kind of decided not to comment on other things that's going on or whatever have you like that, right? So you can't really sell to me that that's not a political statement. I'm not saying everybody should be arts activists. That's not what I'm saying. People have different destinies. I'm just saying that there is nothing that's not, that doesn't have an effect on society.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Right. So, and another way you can look at it is if I'm painting flowers or something like that and it calms people's spirit, well, I'm bringing a healing that way. But any way you look at it, everything has something. It's arts and culture. It reflects, it impacts back on the culture one way or another.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's, to me, the role of the artist in society. What was the question that we started with?
How do you hold yourself, sort of not lose yourself, when you're holding sort of the grief and the joy of the community?
And then you asked me another thing about the artist. And I said, I'm going to tell you about society first. And then I said, I was going to tell you about me.
Oh, how does art, mm-hmm. how has art and culture sort of woven through your life?
Right.
And you brought it
so
out
I already told you that some people would say that I was a troubled youth or whatever like that. I'm not going to say if I'm going to sign on to that or whatever, but you caught me on the wrong day and in the wrong way. You might think I was a troubled youth or whatever. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So on another day, you would think I was the best of you. So this is just the truth. So, but long story short, probably why, if anybody thought I was the best of youth, a lot of that came from my family. Father, mother, family, and community that poured positivity into me. And then, but also, I got put in the arts movement at like around 1978 when I was 12 years old. By 1980, I was 14 and I was painting murals with Mancor Allen and Public Art Works Incorporated. Okay. So I was being put into a revolutionary movement. You understand what I'm saying? A revolutionary movement at 14 years old. So I had all these things going on. I'm painting murals in a day. I don't know if I want to incriminate myself or whatever, but
Let's
I'm
not.
doing some other things too. Okay. All right. I'm doing some other things too. You know what I'm saying?
We'll use our
Right.
imagination.
Well, whatever, you know. So I had these positive, definitely had these positive things going on, almost like a counterbalance to the environment that I grew up in. And then, but then I'm also going to these elite schools, which is a whole nother world, right? So the arts for me was like a lifesaver, a life focuser, right? And a lot of things faded away. As a matter of fact, part of the reason that I kind of calmed down, it wasn't even no decision based on consciousness, is because I started breakdancing. I became a professional breakdancer. And when I became a professional breakdancer, in order to compete at that level, it requires so much enormous discipline. A lot of other stuff just faded away. I ain't had time for it. It just faded away. And I was making more money breakdancing. It just faded away, right? So the arts to me was always something to focus. It was a lifesaver. You know, I didn't really have time. Once I really got into it, I didn't really have time for too much else, right? For me, the arts was visual arts, and then I was a dancer. That was actually my favorite art out of everything, was dancing, right? Above and beyond everything else. And then I started learning music as youth too, right? And then I went and become a muralist. I joined the mural movement, which is a movement. It's a cultural revolutionary movement, right?
Yeah, this thing about discipline that you said really strikes me, and sort of being committed to whatever you're doing. And it does make me think about the EBA, right? And you're saying people can either choose to do it or not. And I definitely have gotten some from you, and definitely did them. And I would have to say my life is probably different because of the work that we did. And so I want to, as we begin to sort of round out the conversation, I want to take it to the ancestral realm, right? And talk about the role of the ancestors in our lives as Black folks from your point of view.
The first thing that jumps to my mind when you talk about Egun ancestors is what we're really talking about is that's also a term or a position that is shored up by hard work and building one's EY, one's character. So what we're really talking about is enlightened, family concerned and community concerned spirits in me who, upon their transition, went and joined the ranks of our Egun. This is not everybody in the family, because that's what people, you know, common sense people would be like, they know that everybody in the family is not worthy. They weren't worthy when they were here on this side of the equation with us to be consulted. So why would you be consulting them as, you know, eternal spirits? So what we're really talking about is enlightened Egun, you know, who contributed into the family thing. They don't have to be perfect people, because none of us are. Right? Not one, right? But we know who were the ones who tried to contribute and who were the ones that really, you know, they were slacking on that, right? And so those Egun that showed demonstrated their concern for the welfare of the whole, this is who we are connecting with. You understand what I'm saying? And they are living beings, okay? Because we, as far as I can see, my deep belief, I don't see anything to make me backtrack from this belief. Is that Awani and me? We are eternal spirits, right? We don't, you know, we come here temporarily in these bodies, but we have an inner force that connects to Olodumare, to the whole of creation, and we live forever, right? So, therefore, we still have a continuance of concern for the success of our Ebi, for our families. So that brings another thing. This I teach on our school, Juju Pa Orisha Voodoo Inspired Living. I would say there's about five prongs to the family that I think is very important to think about. And if not six, but let's just go with five. We will start with Egun, the ancestors. Then we will go to Agba, the elders. Then we will go to the adults. Okay, that's three, huh? Mm-hmm. Then we will go to the children, Omo, the children. And here's the fourth one, the kicker, that a lot of people don't think about so much. We have children that are yet to be born.
Mm.
The Omo that are not born yet.
Mm-hmm.
Because decisions that we make today and culture that we make today will impact them. They will be born into a fabric that is created by our decisions and our culture, whether they like it or not.
Yes.
So that's five. I could throw Olodumare in there. I could throw the Orisha in there. It could make it six or seven. But let's focus on the five.
Okay.
Keep kind of seven, right?
Okay.
Right? Now, this scenario to me goes no matter what your family situation is, because first of all, we have some family members who are like, they break the chain. They don't take care of their duties. I think we all have them. I know I do, right? And they didn't take care of their duties. And then it's a broken chain. Sometimes it gets so bad, or it might not even be that they didn't take care of their duties. It could be war. It could be war, slavery, poverty, calamity that broke the chain.
Yes.
Okay?
Yeah.
All right?
Of course.
Sometimes whether they didn't take care of their duties or a catastrophe broke the chain, we get physically separated from the family line, right?
Yes.
You may not even know who your parents were, your birth parents. You might not know who they were, okay? For various reasons that I just described, right? But here's something that can never be broken. The DNA chain, it cannot be broken. Can't break it. It's unbreakable. And here's another thing that can never be broken. The ancestral link to Egun that can communicate through the cosmos, through the metaphysical web of life. It is unbreakable. It can never be broken. Let's say you had a parent, usually the father, but rarely, sometimes even the mother, and they dropped the ball. They didn't take care of their duties. They absconded. They abandoned. Or whatever, right? So then they'd be like, well, I don't even know my father's people. I don't know who they are. Yeah, but they know who you are. That's just one person who dropped the ball, or maybe a couple of people, but it ain't all of them. Every family has useful people and eat that care of their useless people. Everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So you can connect to your Egun and reconnect to your family bond and your family heritage and all the good things, aspects of your family. It's a fact.
Yeah.
You do that through spiritual, metaphysical, Ifa, Isheshe, voodoo type of things. This is our healing.
Yes.
Particularly for those of us who, in the recent time of our eton of our story, only recently, only in the recent time, brief time, we've been more heavily exposed to slavery and kidnapping. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I say recent because previous to that recent time, we were less exposed to slavery and kidnap. I'll say that less exposed. Recent, I mean, like last 1500 years since the Arabs started really going in on African people to enslave them and scatter them all over the world. There were some times before that, too. If you know Etan, you will know that it happened before and stuff like that, but not so much before that compared to what we're used to now. And our eton is so our history, our story is so long. 1500 years is like a blip in our time. Mm-hmm. It's literally just a blip. This is a blip, right? So, yes, you can reconnect to them. So that's one joy I have of this work, because in our training, one of the first things that they're going to teach you is Egungun work. You get initiated and you get taught to help the community through Egungun work. And it's just miraculous. Miraculous, all the type of family healing that happens through that work. This is miraculous.
It's true.
And and so, you know, I have people a lot of times they saying, well, Baba, you saying all that stuff, but I don't know my family or whatever like that. I'd be like, yeah, well, we got a solution for that for you. We got an elevation for that. We got some healing for that. It's really great. Right.
Yeah.
And even those that do know their family, then, you know, like I said, in families, we got some that was useful and some that were not. And most of us have a couple that was might have been downright destructive. Yes. You know, I mean, like, you know, they got child molesters. You probably got in the family. You know, mm-hmm. It is what it is. Mm-hmm. Right. So dealing with the egoon, to me, dealing with the egoon is the number one way I know of for making successful family cohesion in spite of whatever might be going on in the family
mm-hmm.
when there's trouble in the family. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I definitely can say, so when my mm-hmm. mom passed and mm-hmm. I hesitated to, oh my goodness, this is a funny story. So I hesitated to create an altar for her for mm-hmm. a while. One, because I was renovating her house. So the house was in disarray. I moved my stuff into her house. So it just was not correct. But when she first passed, I had the living room and everything painted. And I had some pictures of my father, my grandparents on the wall. Mm-hmm. So I tried to put my mother's picture on the wall. So I put her picture on the wall between my father and her mother. I walk out of the room, I hear boom. The picture was on the floor. I was like, oh, okay, maybe that's just a nail. So I go back, I put it back on the wall. Go out to do something else, boom, again, picture on the floor. I was like, gosh, that is so weird. So I adjusted the nail a little bit, put her back up there, left the room again, boom, she fell off. I was like, girl, do you not want to be on this wall with...
Every time's a charm. Yeah, you'd have to listen to that.
I was like,
right. Mm-hmm.
Do you not? So like I said, the house was just, you know, renovations. The house was just mm-hmm. wild. But the thing mm-hmm. was, my mother always had her coffee in the morning at the kitchen table.
Mm-hmm.
So I had her urn and I put her urn on the kitchen table and then I put her picture next to it, made her some coffee, put her in her glass. So I made her like just this like little altar on the kitchen table, because I was mm-hmm. like, you want your own space? Like, like you want your own. And then my friend Ebony was like, yeah. And maybe she wasn't ready to be crossed over yet. Maybe she was just like, you know, I'm not gone. Don't be putting me up on the wall with the folks that are gone. So, so I left her there for a while. Mm-hmm. And then once the house was back in order and I made the altar and I put her on the altar, and they just started talking, like my grandparents, my father, my mother. And I would just go in the room where they were, sit on my yoga mat, just like cry and listen to them. And there were so many apologies and just like so many, like, we can see you now. We couldn't see you when we were living, but now we can mm-hmm. see who you are, and like, and thanking me. And it was like overwhelming to the point where I was like, okay, y'all, I got it. It's fine, like all is well. But it was just so healing for me to be wrapped in that energy in those early months of her passing. So, yeah, it's real stuff.
Yeah, right. So, you know, it's a lot. So, you know, if you think about that five prongs of the family, like I talk about, what we want to try to do is bring them together. Mm. And if for whatever reason, if one of those, some of those prongs are messed up, now we got problems, right? Mm-hmm. Now, family does not necessarily have to be only limited to blood.
Yes.
No way. Yes. Right. Okay. So egun does not necessarily have to be only limited to blood. Right. Okay. Yeah. So, you know, because we have all, you know, we, you know, by necessity, human beings would have all different types of family structures. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? You know, that's because even when we're at our best, we're still temporary. You know, we still can be removed from this phase of life. So.
Yeah.
But any way you look at it, when you connect to egun, whether that's your blood egun or some other egun, that's your family egun, may not be blood, but it's still your family. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Right.
Yeah.
then now you're connecting into a whole nother type of wisdom, and you're keeping that line going from Egun to Agba, elders, to the adults, mm-hmm. to the Omo, to the children. And you're setting up a better foundation for the children that are not yet here.
Yes.
Even if you biologically didn't have any children, it's irrelevant because you're still part of the family.
Yes.
You're still part of the Ebi. You're still part of that fabric.
Yes.
And you, unless you just totally gone missing, you still have duties to nieces, nephews, or some other. You got duties to the community. You, yes. So you, there's no way possible that you don't fit into this picture of family. If you're a human being, you are part of a family.
And it's important.
And it's the cornerstone of African culture.
Ah.
Take care of your family. That's the cornerstone of African culture.
Mm.
Take care of the family. Make sure the family's thriving. This thing is entity number one of traditional African culture, period.
Right. I love that. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. we already know, and this is a whole other conversation, maybe for your documentary, because mm-hmm. I just keep seeing documentary.
People keep telling me that.
I see it. And I know you know the people to do it. But I would say because of the things that have happened.
I got one in mind. I ain't going to name her name, but I'm going to send her this so she's going to see. Because
yeah.
she's the main one telling me. I'm like, okay, well, you do it.
Yeah, it needs to be done. It needs to be done. Mm-hmm. But I feel mm-hmm. like let's, you know, this podcast, this mm-hmm. this particular mm-hmm. conversation is an invitation, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. We know that so mm-hmm. many things make us feel isolated. Mm-hmm. So many things make us feel like we're not a part of a family. And that can be from our family and that mm-hmm. can be from the global family. But I just want to say mm-hmm. that this is your invitation to find your way back. That you mm-hmm. are a part of a family, you are a part of the cosmic family, you do matter, you do belong, there is a place for you. And so, this is an invitation to find your way back any way that makes sense to you. So I want to just put that invitation out to anybody who's listening.
Ashe.
Baba Marcus.
Can I add one thing on that?
I was just going to say, what else you want to say?
Well, on what you just said, I want to add something, which is that, so now you got your family, whether that's biological or whether that's your family from life, okay, right? But I could put you on a desert island out in the Pacific, one of them atolls that nobody's been in 1,000 years, like the movie Survivor, and you're still not alone. Right. You ain't alone. You're rolling with an entourage. You got Egun with you. You got Orisha that you are part of that's with you. You're never alone. So one of the things that I found, to get back to your original question about carrying the weight of community, like I said, I don't carry the weight of the community, but I'm part of the community. So there's weight on the community, there's weight on me, right?
Yes.
Okay, so the thing is, when you realize that you roll with an entourage, you know what I'm saying? And you got a gang mentality, you know what I'm saying? You're never alone. You never feel like you got to go out here and face all this stuff alone. Yeah. The reality is you do not. You do not. And particularly when you start tapping into your Egun, and then from there you tap into Orisha. You know what I'm saying? You could be rolling with Oshosi. You could be rolling with Ogun. You could be rolling with Yemowo. You could be rolling with Oba. You rolling with Orisha.
Yeah.
You ain't alone. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. This mm-hmm. is so good. What a great conversation. In closing, anything mm-hmm. that you want to finish with, and how can people support your work, support your art, mm-hmm. support what you're mm-hmm. doing, and how can people find you?
Okay, well, if you know my name, I'm easy to find. We created this website, www.akinlana.com. That's like the hub. It's got everything on there. It's got Juju Pa Orisha Voodoo Inspired Living. That's our outreach from Ileakar Shah. It's got Ileakar Shah Yoruba. That's our training institute here. It's got the music. It's got the art. I think everything, maybe except for the martial arts training. I'm on hiatus now. You know, I did train people for some years here in mm-hmm. self-defense and combat and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's the thing. For people that really want to roll with us in regards to what we're talking about today, they can join Juju Power because we're really getting it in. We're in our 7th year of sharing online, which we never did that before. Mm-hmm. So this is 7th year anniversary. You know, that's the first 7-year cycle.
Yes.
So we're enjoying that. you know, the people that want services, they can reach out to us. We're part of the Oyutunji lineage. We've been around for a long time. And, you know, that's what's popping. I will say one thing I think I want people to check out. We did a thing called the Bull Bancha Rise Up to drop the violence in Bull Bancha, a.k.a. New Orleans. And we're still enjoying the benefits of that. Now it's been 2 years after. And we want to bring that into, we want to bring it first nationally and internationally to help solve some of these problems. So we want to use our Afro-Indigenous culture to be victorious and conquer and overcome in life right now. And we did the Bull Bancha Rise Up to do that, to reduce our sufferation. And we concluded it in 2023. I want people to really check that out, because that can be duplicated when you are experiencing the harsh end of life, whether that's through instability, violence, colonization, white pathology, or any of the plaguing problems that we are facing today, poverty, whatever, the plaguing problems that we are facing today. It can be dealt with, and it can be elevated, and it can be changed. And we proved it. Now, you know, we live here in one of the most culturally rich, but also one of the most closest to the fire of Eurocentric psychosis and colonization. That's us, right? And therefore, we had some of the most instability and highest violence. And we were able to contribute or create a situation with us in Orisha where all that's dropped. That's a fact. So I want people to see what we did so that we can share. You know what I'm saying? And I feel that after, for me personally, in my personal journey, I feel that after 40 years of being dedicated to activism, I feel it's starting to see really the seeds bear fruit. Now, keep in mind that the seed was planted before I was born by other great dedicated people, you know, and we just kind of contributed more into it when it came our time. But these seeds go back for generation. But I feel that we can see the seed bearing fruit and the power building, which, of course, is why we have so many ignorant crackers throwing temper tantrum right now. Okay. So that should be to expect it. So nobody should be getting depressed about all that, what they're trying to bring their fascist crackeration or whatever like that. You should have already anticipated that. They weren't just going to, you know, roll over while you were rising up, because they have a lack-based consciousness, and they believe that they feel so poorly about themselves. They are so instilled with deep self-hatred, they have to run other people down or dominate other people in order for them to feel that their world is in order. That's how sick they are, right? We don't want to be like them. We want to be like us. And we want to tie into our own center. But we have the right also to do that. And anybody who tries to stop us from tying into our own center should be treated as an enemy and crushed. So we have the power to do it. Let's get at it.
Right. I love it. Thank you so much. And oh my God, I have to add this. I know we're supposed to be closing, but I just have to say what Baba Marcus is talking about looks like in real time. So in 2021, we know COVID-19 brought out a whole bunch of activity, right, in our neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. It brought out a lot of things. And I also want to say Baba Marcus told me what to do during COVID. And I have to say, we experienced no COVID in my home. My mother was 83 years old when she passed last year. She never had COVID. Okay. Mm-hmm. I had COVID because I went and did a conference in 2022, but Baba Marcus told us what to do, was sending out information to us all during COVID, how to protect ourselves and things like that. But where my mother and I lived, there was a lot of activity happening. There was activity happening right in front of our house. There was activity happening in our yard. Like, things were getting really wild. And so I reached out to Baba Marcus. He told me what to do, what we call EBA to do. And then I added my own sauce on some things afterwards. I have to say, there were no more drug deals that were happening in front of my mother's house, because people was doing it right outside my window. No more. There were people across the street that every other day, the ambulance, the police were there. They moved. So this is what the work looks like when you take it seriously. My mother had to have a surgery, and she was they wouldn't even do the anesthesia because she was smoking so much she couldn't even have the surgery. Again, reached out to Bobby Marcus. He did blah 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 blah. I did what he told me to do. My mother was operated on. Like, this is what this stuff looks like in real time. It works if you work it, if you have discipline, if you have sacrifice, and if you take it seriously.
It's funny because I don't remember any of this.
Of course you don't. Of course you don't.
It's all good.
Of course you
The main
don't.
thing is that it worked.
It
It
worked.
worked.
It
Power
worked.
to the people,
Yeah,
right?
that's it. That's
I
it.
dupe way fool no risha, I
Yeah,
say.
it worked.
Right. I
So
barely remember and
I
barely
bet.
if we remember. Yeah, right.
Yeah, I bet. But there's been like, yeah, three specific instances where I came to you and the situation worked out right. So I say all that
I
to say.
dupe way phony fa. Yeah, I dupe way phone Egun. We give thanks to our Egun. So we got this power, like you said.
Yeah, we
Let's
have
use it.
yeah, we have the
Right.
power. So that's it, folks. That's it for this conversation. Again, please check into all the work that Baba Marcus is doing. It's so important, it's so critical.
I'm on Dupuy for inviting me on this wonderful podcast. Everybody, check out Zoe Flowers. I'm going to put the links. What links are important to you, Mama, that people should check?
Definitely my website, iamzoeflowers.com. And then the Come to the Brink podcast. We're available on all platforms.
Ashe, come to the Brink platform.
You
Ashe.
know, on our next episode, we are going to be diving into something kind of heavy, but again, necessary. We're going to be talking about the grief that comes when we realize our caretakers have betrayed us in unimaginable ways, right? So it's just like the things that Baba Marcus was dropping down, right? What do we do when we wake up to the reality that somebody we trusted caused us harm? How do we grieve that trauma we've hidden? And how do we recover from it? So if this is something that you all have dealt with, you know I want to hear
Till
from
next
you.
time.
Remember that no one should stand on the brink alone. And we're not alone. All right. I'm Zoe Flowers, and
Ashe.
I will see you soon. Bye.
Mon dupe.